BAI.org. The program you just heard, Labrish with Hapte Selassie, will be back next week at 2 a.m. following the work of the Midnight Ravers. It is 5 o'clock and time for Back of the Book. I have to do this too, don't I?
You're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. My name is Bill Samuels, founder of NYPeoplesConvention.org. WBAI is New York's leader in progressive talk. Whether the issue is prison reform, education reform, the legalization of marijuana, or women's rights, the people's issues are covered on these airways. So stay tuned for the best in leading-edge progressive ideas and analysis. And remember to support independent media financially.
This is radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the Feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top of the line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
I strongly suspect it's 5 a.m. and you're listening to All Maybe They Finally Will Lock Him Up Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about various things in this program, and you can find out a little bit more about that stuff by going to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of your screen. At the top, it will say Latest Back of the Book Program Links. Click on that, and you'll get to the web page for this morning's radio program. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 130th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program can't be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. The top story everywhere this past week is that on Twitter we have rocketed up to the astoundingly large number of 121 followers. Oh, everyone is so amazed at that huge number. We have been there before, and now we're back. And a program note. We are preempted next week for another fundraising special, and this program is going to be a little bit possibly odd because we've been given a very early deadline to get this program posted or else it ain't going to go on the air. So that may affect what we do on this program. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, April 12th, 2023 at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. The Johns Hopkins website is no longer covering COVID-19. I'm seeing that the CDC website says that, quote, maps, charts, and data provided by CDC updates Monday through Friday by 8 p.m. ET, unquote. So this is not as up-to-date as the Johns Hopkins data used to be, but it's what we have to use. The CDC website says that in America, the number of reported cases of COVID-19 as of Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time was 104,137,196 in America, and the death toll in America was 1,125,366. The CDC is saying on its website that the death toll for this past week was 1,596, but subtracting last week's total deaths from this week's total deaths gives 1,753, which is like more than 150 more than what the CDC says. I don't know what's going on. In any event, either way, we have about 300 fewer deaths than last week, or maybe 450 fewer than last week. I don't know. Either way, the rate is coming down, but there are still a lot of people dying of this virus more than 3 years after it came onto the global scene. The pandemic is not over. Pickles of the North and I are still keeping our masks on. We've both gotten our bivalent vaccinations. We are not among those who are saying that getting a COVID-19 infection is like getting a cold. And by the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted will be higher, of course. This was all mostly preventable. So, this is the morning of April 1st, 2023, and that is a kind of a special day. And, in fact, we had a special, what's called an evergreen graphic for this program. It's not the final graphic, but it was based on this day. And Pickles of the North is going to tell us a little bit about April 1st.
April Fool's Day. Yes, indeed. And this is just a little blurb from, the Embassy of the United States of America from like 30 years ago. But they did a little blurb on April Fool's Day. They're explaining holidays in the USA. April Fool's Day, April 1st. In 16th century France, the start of the new year was observed on April 1st. It was celebrated in much the same way as it is today, with parties and dancing into the late hours of the night. Then, in 1562, Pope Gregory introduced a new calendar for the Christian world, and the new year fell on January 1st. There were some people, however, who hadn't heard or didn't believe the change in the date, so they continued to celebrate New Year's Day on April 1st. Others played tricks on them and called them April Fools. They sent them on a fool's errand or tried to make them believe that something false was true. In France today, April 1st is called Poisson d'Avril. French children fool their friends by taping a paper fish to their friends' backs. Oh, those scamps. When the young fool discovers this trick, the prankster yells, Poisson d'Avril! April fish! April fish! Today, Americans play small tricks on friends and strangers alike on the first day of April. Teachers in the 19th century used to say to pupils, look, a flock of geese, and point up. Boy, I don't know, was that a knee slapper back then? I guess it gets lost in translation for we in the 21st century. Whatever the trick, if the innocent victim falls for the joke, the prankster yells, April Fool! The fool's errands we play on people are practical jokes. Putting salt in the sugar bowl for the next person is not a nice trick to play on a stranger. That is true. Although I must admit that in our family, that was considered to be. Ha-ha.
I did that once.
Ha-ho! Most April Fool's jokes are in good fun and not meant to harm anyone. The most clever April Fool joke is the one where everyone laughs, especially the person upon whom the joke is played. The 1st of April is the day we remember what we are the other 364 days of the year. American humorist Mark Twain. And now we leave the embassy aside and we go to High Days and Holidays by Eleanor Graham. Ah, a lovely tune from 1930. April Fool's Day, April 1st. Look behind you! How many of you have been caught by the warning cry on April Fool's Day? Children still make a practice of tripping up their parents and each other, though they are generally too cautious to be caught by a grown-up themselves. People don't seem to know for certain how the custom began. It must have had a starting point. Well, we just mentioned it before, didn't we? Let's see if they mention it, too. Some say that it was when the calendar had one of its shifts round. The year was shifted back to begin on the 1st of January instead of the 1st of April, and there were many who refused to change their reckoning, just as you find people now who won't change their clocks for summertime. Of course, those who were keeping their new year in April instead of January came in for a good deal of teasing and practical joking. They received presents with just a lot of wrapping paper with April Fool on a card in the middle. Now, of course, I stop here because in France, you give presents on New Year's, not on Christmas. Christmas is like, it's too holy to be sullied by, you know, the joy of getting a present.
Well, at least in America, we've blown that crap out of the water.
And I must admit, at Christmas time, I do remember getting packages that I had to unwrap and unwrap and unwrap, because that's always a big ha-ha no matter what time of year. Do continue. Or they were invited to come to a New Year's dinner and were greeted on arrival with the same rude words, April Fool. Well, no dinner. That's pretty mean. Most of us know the absolute disgustingness of that bogus parcel. It looks so tempting outside, and you can't help remarking that perhaps it is a book or a box of paints or something that everyone knows you want most urgently. You cut the string and tear off the paper only to find more paper, and you think how carefully it has been packed. By the time you have realized the hoax, you have given yourself away completely, and everyone but you is in fits of laughter. Oh, very funny, but not for you. That is a little bit about April Fool.
I'm sure we don't have to tell you that Donnie Bonespur Trump has been indicted by a Manhattan grand jury. Oh, but it's so good to hear that at long last. On Thursday, that Manhattan grand jury actually handed down the indictment at last. So far, Trump's threats of death and destruction and catastrophe for the nation haven't happened yet. In fact, there are more people in front of Trump Tower and in front of the courthouse in downtown Manhattan who are celebrating his indictment than there are Trump supporters. Of course, one Trump supporter who was in front of the courthouse on Wednesday got arrested for pulling a knife and threatening a woman who was there with her kids. But we'll see what happens when Trump is supposedly going to surrender in Manhattan this coming Tuesday. Tuesday afternoon. Well, we'll see if anything goes on then.
Tuesday afternoon.
Maybe we'll play that later since we're rushed for time. The other creep, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, is saying that the state of Florida is not going to cooperate on the extradition of Trump. Well, Article 4, Section 2, Clause 2 of the United States Constitution says that, quote, a person charged in any state with treason, felony, or other crime who shall flee from justice and be found in another state shall, on demand of the executive authority of the state from which he fled, be delivered up to be removed to the state having jurisdiction of the crime, unquote. That's the Constitution. And in 1987, the Supreme Court reversed a 19th century ruling on extradition and ruled unanimously that the federal courts did indeed have the power to enforce a writ of mandamus and that the 19th century ruling was outdated. So fugitives for whom extradition had been refused under the former rule are now subject to extradition. A writ of mandamus is something that makes you do something. Okay. And so, yeah, they ruled in 1987. Yeah, you can force the extradition. It is legal. So the governor of Florida may have a problem there. But Trump wants the personal publicity anyway, so he'll probably come to New York to show off and try to raise more money from right-wing fools. Oh boy, next Tuesday should be very interesting, although it has the potential to be unpleasant. And it is interesting that Trump's big failing, his ego and his desire for attention, may just have him walking into this thing, and oh boy. Of course, after the indictment and all of that, and he's fingerprinted and all of this stuff, I'm sure he'll be allowed to go back to Florida. However, I wonder if somewhere down the line, when he has to come up here for an actual trial, I wonder if he'll try to skip then. That would be very interesting. Be very interesting to see a former American president hiding out in another country to avoid prosecution. Wonder what country he'll go to. Probably Russia. I can see that. He would go to his pal Putin, who probably still has those pee-pee tapes of Trump. Might go to Russia and say, I'm staying over here now. Boy, that would certainly be something historic, even more historic than Trump being the first former United States president to get indicted for crimes. And this case is not really just about paying off people to not tattle about his infidelities. It's about falsifying the payoffs. People just keep not getting that. I guess it's because trying to say, and then falsifying the records and all of this is boring, but saying, hey, he was trying to hide the payoff to this porn star for boinking her. That gets more people's attention. They pay, attention to that. But talking about the actual legal issue, that's boring stuff. So that's why we're hearing it's about the payment to her. It's really about the payment to her that's connected to falsifying business records to hide that. He committed a felony in the cover-up. The cover-up is so frequently something that ends up having worse consequences than what people were trying to cover up in the first place. Trump chose to have a Bund rally for his presidential campaign in Waco, Texas last Saturday. He sent out an email to his supporters asking them to send him money to help, quote, destroy the deep state, unquote, destroy in all caps. Don't they realize that he's constantly trying to get money out of them? I mean, he has trading cards and other things and ball caps and flags with his name on it and all these little tchotchkes that he sells for ridiculously high prices. And these fools keep sending him their money. God damn. Really, this is crazy. So 30 years ago, the Branch Davidians were still holding out in their Waco compound against the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Agency and the FBI. Was Trump trying to show solidarity with those violent nutcases? He certainly seems to be doing that with the violent nutcases these days. Maybe that's what he was saying. Oh, the deep state cracked down on these Christians. They were you know, complete nutcases who were abusing children and doing other bad things and looked like they were going to, you know, shoot some people. And, oh, boy, the people he shows solidarity with. I'm also reading that Trump's former finance chief, Alan Weisselberg, may end up giving more evidence against Trump in some other cases because there are other cases pending with Trump doing illegal things, mostly regarding money and falsifying documents, a trend that goes through his whole life and into his father's life. And so Weisselberg may end up being involved that, and he may be giving more evidence against Trump. And the Trump camp is apparently not at all pleased about that. It'll be interesting if Trump is able to skate on his attempts to overthrow the government and erase the results of an election, and then he gets nailed on felony charges for financial scheming. That'd be rich. I'm thinking that almost a century ago, Al Capone was invulnerable, even though he was running the biggest bootlegging cartel in America. He had a gigantic gang. He bought politicians left and right. He owned a city called Cicero in Illinois, because Chicago got a little bit hot for him. And he had the mayor of Chicago assassinated while he was standing next to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was running for president in 1932. Oh, goddamn. So Al Capone was invulnerable pretty much to everything. He was not only personally murdering enemies, which we know he did. He personally murdered people. In one case, with a baseball bat, his thugs held them and bent them over, and he bashed their heads in with a baseball bat. Plus, at other times, he did more prosaic gunplay. See, he not only personally murdered his enemies, but Capone ordered hits on many people. And then they got him on income tax evasion. That's how they got him. His big stuff, they never got him on. But he went to prison on income tax evasion and spent most of the remainder of his life in prison. And, you know, he died from syphilis or gonorrhea. And, oh, boy. Anyway, yeah, so this is kind of maybe what will happen to Trump. Who knows? That he may get away with attempting to overthrow the government, but maybe some of these, quote, little things, unquote, with money may get him put in prison. And one way or another, I want to see him in prison. And I was reading an opinion piece in the New York Times about how the right wing gets people all upset about change and gets people to want to go back to the way things were in the past, cajoling people into thinking that things were so much better many years ago, and getting them to trust instincts that reinforce that sort of feeling. I've been reading a book, not a little book, by one Joachim C. Fest. It's a biography. The name of the book is Hitler. That's whom it's in a biography about. And the writer Fest notes that in the immediate aftermath of World War I, the Weimar Republic of Germany had a lot of people pining for what they would call the good old days, and embellishing the past and saying, oh, it was like this, and this is so much better than we have it today in the Weimar Republic. The Weimar Republic was, nobody wanted it. It was mostly hated, in some cases barely tolerated, but that was it. Nobody liked it. The Germans had never had real democracy, and they didn't like it. They preferred to have, you know, Kaiser Wilhelm II in charge of everything, and that's what they liked. And all of a sudden, you've got this thing of where they have to make decisions. And these guys get elected, and these guys are politicians and talk to you and get elected one way or another. And it was much better, they said, when we were certain and somebody said, this is the truth, and that was it. Whether it was the truth or not, that was the truth, because the dictator, the king, the Kaiser, said so. And so they were embellishing the past. You know, it wasn't enough to just say, well, we liked it better then. They made it sound like the time of the Kaiser was just wonderful for everybody. It wasn't. Anyway, the writer Fest cites Thomas Mann as saying that what a lot of Germans were getting involved in was, quote, an explosion of antiquarianism, unquote, because it was all make-believe. You know, let's go back to the Roman Empire, for Christ's sakes, if you want. Anyway, this was what was going on in Germany, and they were having, of course, these massive street fights with armed gangs shooting at each other. The right wing and the left wing were just murdering everybody in the streets and each other. And Hitler was an instrument of this desire to throw back and go into the past. And Hitler and the other right-wing criminals of that time were appealing to people to place all of their faith in instinct and to not bother with things like logic or reason. Fest writes, quote, no doubt the appeal to instinct brought out a good deal of human baseness. No doubt what fascism wanted to restore was often a grotesque parody of the traditions they purported to honor. And the order they hailed was a hollow sham, unquote. Yeah, we have some very serious parallels with the Weimar Republic these days. That's too bad. However, in our favor, the Weimar Republic was only a few years old when this sort of thing was racking it, and the Weimar Republic even ceased to exist after about 15 years of existence. And if we're lucky, the more than 230 years that the Democratic Republic of the United States of America has been able to at least largely live by its constitution will help us get through our travails with the right wing and with some of the left wing. Or, you know, nobody has a patent on nutcases, let me tell you. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. There's a good thing happening with Army forts. Fort Pickett, named after the Confederate general who became famous at the Battle of Gettysburg for his failed charge, has been renamed Fort Barfoot, which is named for Colonel Van T. Barfoot, a Native American World War II hero credited with capturing 17 Nazis and killing several more during a single battle in 1944. Now, I read that and I was thinking, wait a minute, my father killed a lot of Nazis. He shot a lot of them. They, you know, apparently he didn't realize that they weren't being kind to him when they had him walking point almost all the time. And then at one point, the BAR man, that's the Browning automatic rifle, which is a light machine gun you could carry. Yeah, light. It wasn't light. It weighed, you know, like, what, 20 pounds or some goddamn thing. It was a huge monstrosity. But he liked the M1 rifle. He didn't like the BAR, the Browning automatic rifle, because it would jam. And that was a thing that it would do. It had a problem because it wasn't designed that well. Browning didn't design the BAR that well, and it had a tendency to jam on you. And when you're in a firefight, to have your gun jam, oh boy, even though it's just a piece of a second to pull back the operating rod handle, eject the round that's jammed, and then keep shooting again, that fraction of a second can really have an effect on your emotions. And so so he was the BAR guy, and he would be ordered to go up and just spray over there and get everybody you can over there. And there was a time when he got lost in one of the forests. I'm not sure if it was the Ardennes or the Hurtgen Forest. He was with Patton's Third Army at this point. And he was from Brooklyn. And for him, a forest was mostly Prospect Park. Although he did have to go to Nevada for a while in the Three Seas and do stuff there. But that was mostly with forests that had burned down already. And they were trying to deal with that. And so he...
But don't have to. Arpaul, what are the Three C's?
Oh, the Three C's. That was a thing that President Roosevelt had brought up. The Civilian Conservation Corps, it took young men and it gave them various kinds of work to do, usually with things like building things. Some of the national parks had the buildings in them built by guys in the Three C's. My father used to go fighting fires in Nevada and cutting down trees when, for whatever reason, they had to cut down trees. All this kind of stuff that he used to do. And so, yes, that was part of what the Three C's were about. Anyway, so he's in some European thick forest with old growth trees that have been growing in the same spot for 200 or 300 years. And, they're fighting. The Wehrmacht is in there and it's shooting back and forth. And all of a sudden he looks around. There's nobody near him that's speaking English, but there are guys who are speaking German and they're looking for him. And it turned out there were six guys looking for him. And what he did, because they knew he was there, because he might have given himself away somehow. And there were no Americans near him. And he was utterly lost. He didn't know what direction to go in. You don't want to go in a direction where all of a sudden you step out from the forest and there's a battalion of Wehrmacht standing there. And so what he did was he kind of buried himself under the leaf and litter, under a log, and these six Germans are looking for him. Basically, he picked them off one by one. He killed all six, got out from there, wandered around, and eventually somehow found the other Americans and said, "Wow, I'm lucky I didn't get killed." He also captured German prisoners, and he always got in trouble for that. This was toward the very end of the war when the Germans were trying to surrender. And two things were happening. One, the Soviet army was coming in from the east and they didn't want to be captured by the Soviet army because they knew what happened to German soldiers who were captured by the Soviet army. For instance, when the Soviet army was capturing the guys and they had been invaded Russia, the Soviet Union. And when they were defeated, especially at Stalingrad and captured, 95% of them who were captured and prisoners of war didn't live to get back to Germany. And in my grammar school, there was a German kid and his father was one of the lucky ones. And his father and my father used to talk. Anyway, so my father was out there and the Germans are trying to surrender. There was an order. Do not take prisoners, because they were glutted. The Americans, they had these prisoner of war camps, and it's like, you know, rush hour in the subway. And they said, don't take prisoners. Send them back. Disarm them. Send them back. Well, a part of it is, one, they're liable to get shot or picked up by the Soviets. The other part is the Gestapo had, and the SS had squads out looking for guys who were not carrying weapons, which meant they had given up and not been able to give up fully. They were hanged by the side of the road, and they were just lynched. And this was like, you know, hello, don't give up, or this is what's going to happen to you. Anyway, so the order was, don't take prisoners. For some people, for sadists in the army, this meant, kill them. Okay, you give up. Give me your weapon. Bang! Ha ha, I killed you. This happened. My father said, okay, I'm taking you in. You guys are my prisoners. And he's marching all these Germans back, and the officers are freaking out. We told you not. He almost got court-martialed. I think he did it more than once. Probably saved their lives. So he captured a bunch of prisoners. I don't know how many. But I don't know. He didn't get medals. I don't know. Maybe they just said, you know, we didn't want you to do that, so no medals for you. Or else maybe he got medals and we just don't know about it, because apparently there was a big fire and a lot of the old guys' military records burned up decades ago. In any event, so there was that. And also Fort Gordon, Georgia, where I had to spend an unfortunate amount of my time in 1968, which I didn't want to do. And I was shocked when I was in the, enlisted men's club. The USO, you know, runs these things where you can go to it and hang out and have a soda and maybe watch TV. I played chess. And read a magazine and not have stupid lifer sergeants screaming at you. And, you know, that sort of thing. And they had on the wall a picture of General Gordon. That's a funny uniform he's wearing. He was a Confederate general. He was the enemy. Why do we have an army base named after an enemy? Well, that's getting rectified. Fort Gordon, Georgia is going to be renamed Fort Eisenhower in October, and I am glad of that. In 2018, the Japanese Space Agency had their Hayabusa 2 mission take samples from the asteroid Ryugu. It's being reported in the journal Nature Communications that a team of Japanese and American scientists led by Yasuhiro Oba has analyzed those samples, and they found the chemical compound uracil in it. And uracil is one of the five key bases in the RNA molecules that are crucial to life as we know it. We all know about DNA, and, you know, DNA is the thing that we mostly think of it as, it's what makes us us. Your mother and your father unite half their DNA together and you come about. However, RNA is something that's related to that, but it's absolutely crucial. And some people believe that life may have started from RNA and then DNA developed later on. Anyway, uracil is one of the base pairs in the RNA molecule. And now for DNA, the base pairs are the chemicals guanine, cytosine, adenine, and thymine. Thymine is not to be confused with thiamine, which is a vitamin. It's a different thing. Thymine is an amino acid. But for RNA, uracil replaces thymine as a base. So RNA basically carries messages back and forth and tells some of the mechanism in your cell how to do some stuff. And then it can start working on making other things out of DNA. And because DNA is like the blueprint for a lot of proteins, for all of your proteins. And so this is an interesting thing. This particular thing, discovery of uracil in that asteroid, this shows that the carbonaceous chondrite meteorites that have been found with these organic chemicals in them in the past were not contaminated by contact with earthly organisms, but that the building blocks of RNA are floating around in space on asteroids. Because it couldn't be contaminated. It was grabbed in outer space, sealed up, and it was unsealed in laboratory conditions. It didn't come into contact. You know, they figure, oh, people have said in the past, well, maybe the carbonaceous chondrites, maybe they fell on some grass, and what you're doing is you're measuring the grass cells in this thing. No, that ain't it. That ain't it. One of the things that is very interesting is 23 amino acids are needed for life on Earth. All life needs 23 amino acids. All 23 of those amino acids, plus three more for a total of 26 amino acids, have been found in meteorites that have fallen to Earth. Holy hell. So the idea that, yeah, how does life start? Well, a planet, once it gets a surface of some sort, or maybe just water, meteorites fall into it, and they have the chemicals that will form first RNA and then DNA, and that's how we start. And it's possible, you know, very possible, there is life on places other than this planet. And this helps to bolster that concept. And I don't know, somebody my age may never be around for the discovery of life on another planet, but it is interesting that this sort of thing happens. So this past Monday, a private Christian school called the Covenant School in Nashville, Tennessee, was attacked, and three adults and 3 9-year-olds were killed. A 28-year-old person from Nashville who used to go to the school was the shooter. We hear about this. People who went to a grammar school, they go back to it and start shooting the kids. This is terrible stuff. We're hearing that the person who did it was a transgender person, although there didn't seem to be any real transition for her, as far as I can tell. And the right-wing media are making up stories, including having some manifesto from the shooter, who was killed by police soon after the shooting had started. And there were allegations by the right-wing media that this was in some way really linked to transgendered people. Well, the whole manifesto thing was another conspiracy hoax by the right-wing creeps. They're making this crap up. How many straight males have been shooting up schools for the past couple of decades, you know? And gee whiz, to say, oh, somebody who is maybe transgendered did this. Well, yeah, that's a bad thing, and they certainly shouldn't be doing that. But you can't go around smearing transgendered people over this unless you want to smear all straight males for doing this, because those are overwhelmingly the people who are showing up and shooting up schools and supermarkets and just about every other damn thing they can shoot at. And this past week, after this latest elementary school mass murder, the state of Florida passed legislation allowing any resident to carry a concealed loaded firearm all they please without needing a license to carry it or anything else. So if you're in Florida and you got a gun, you can just tuck it in your waistband and walk around with it, and that's okay by them. I guess Ron DeSantis and the rest of the Republicans in the legislature, they really want to live in the wild, wild west. Maybe they saw too many, you know, cowboy TV shows when they were kids, and now they're trying to act them out. I don't know. Seems stupid to me.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
Hey, there's some lip-smacking stuff coming around. Australian scientists have been doing some experimenting, and they've come up with a massive mammoth meatball. Yeah, and it was grown in a laboratory. And they did it from DNA information and some elephant information. What they did was mammoth DNA has been analyzed. They got a hold of some mammoth bones. They got at the marrow, and they got some of the information from mammoth DNA out of that, but not the entire mammoth genome. And so that's been printed out. Basically, it's, as I said before, it's mathematical, you know, letters. It's just a bunch of letters. And if you line them up right, you have the DNA of an organism. So they've got most of it. And then they, for the parts they're missing, they took African elephant DNA and they filled in those parts. I think there was a movie about this called Jurassic Park, and I don't think things went well in that movie. Anyway, so they have done this, and what they did was they took this DNA, mostly from a mammoth, some of it from an elephant, and they put the DNA in sheep cells, and it grew. Basically, you know, the nucleus of the cell has this DNA in it from the mammoth and the elephant, and it's in the sheep cell. And the sheep cell mechanism, it's another mammal, and it's working fine. It's a eukaryote, which means it has a cell nucleus, and it does what it does, and it starts reproducing and all of that. And from that, they made a meatball. And the main thing here is they're saying someday in the future, this is how we'll have meat. We won't have to kill things. We won't have to have as much pollution. We won't have to have as much global warming, because like the cattle industry really puts out a lot of gases. I mean, cows fart a lot, plus also the processing. And they're saying this could be how the future works. But I don't know. It's interesting, but a little weird.
Silent breed is people!
Here we go again. We're going to go pitching. And we got a pitch. Yes, we're just doing ordinary pitches at this point in time. So we're going to pitch a little less time on this program. And what we're doing is we're saying, please become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. Yes, what you can do, a BAI buddy is the name we give here at BAI to sustaining memberships. And with a sustaining membership, what happens is you donate on a monthly basis to WBAI. And how that works is you call 1-212-209-2950. And when they pick up at the call center, you say, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And you tell them that, and then what you'll do is they'll ask you your information. You can use either your credit card or your debit card. And then you tell them what day of the month you would like to have your card charged. And, of course, you tell them how much you want to donate. You can donate $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month, more if you want to. And then they'll set it up, and that will happen. Every month, you will donate that amount of money. And, you know, if you can donate $10 a month, that would be good. Right now, we are told that we have three BAI buddies for this radio program. Thank you, those three. They don't tell us who they are. We may have found out who they are in the past, but they didn't say explicitly. I mean, I know some people have done one-time donations, and that's fine and dandy. I don't know if any of the people we've mentioned in the past are any of the BAI buddies. Management doesn't give us all that information. Anyway, 1-212-209-2950. If you could, please give us a call at that number. If you become a BAI buddy, you get a baked great big thrilling, what is it, tote bag or a book bag, whatever you want to call it. And you get that with your BAI buddydom. So, yeah, oh boy, I'm rushing. And so we got to get this in by a very early deadline tonight, folks. 1-212-209-2950. Oh, we're hoping that you can call that number and say, yes, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. One, you'll be helping to keep BAI on the air. We've got bills we got to pay. We are up against it. If we get too much more in arrears with the transmitter, they could shut us down because we owe them money. We could also get, you know, something happening because we owe money to the landlord where the studios are. We also, there's all sorts of stuff we got to watch out for. We owe money left and right. 1-212-209-2950. Call that number and you can help WBAI to deal with all of that. You can help us to keep alive. And if you want to, you could also make a one-time donation. And we'll take a one-time donation. I think $10 and up for a one-time donation. Donate as much as you would like. 1-212-209-2950. And I'll point out, you know, we cover all sorts of stuff. Other people aren't talking about the DNA and the RNA, the piece of an RNA, the amino acid, found in an asteroid and pointing out the significance of that. And we do. We talk about these science topics, sometimes more science than other things. Of course, this time we had to talk about Trump. Oh, boy, that's the big thing, isn't it? That creep. Oh, I so hope he goes to prison. 1-212-209-2950, being the first former president of the United States to be arrested and charged with a crime. Oh, boy. That's not enough. I want him in prison. 1-212-209-2950. Trump behind bars. Yes, that would be good. Please call 1-212-209-2950 so we can continue hawking our idea and saying we want to see Trump behind bars. It really would help if you would call that number.
TBB, TBB, TBB.
Trump behind bars. Very good. 1-212-209-2950. We need to hear from you. Yes, we're ringing the bell, trying to get some folks to come and call us up. We can't tell what's happening because this is a pre-recorded program, and we're not in the studio, so we can't look and see who's doing what. But what we can do is hope that you're calling that number and saying you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. 1-212-209-2950. We really got to hear from some people. And if we can get some more BAI buddies, it will really help us. Because by being a BAI buddy, you are noticed by management and you are saying to management, you value these overnight programs. Yeah, it's like getting to be almost daylight now when this program ends, but midnight to 6 is considered overnight, and 5 to 6 is a part of that. And management, you know, doesn't really care too much about us, but the deal is there have been all sorts of plans people have come up with to replace midnight to 6 with renting out the station's signal. That would wipe out all of the overnight programs, all of the overnight programs. We need to show that we have listeners. We need to show that you're there and you care about this station. The way we do that is by you calling 1-212-209-2950 and saying, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. If you do that, you can help us to survive. You can help keep WBAI on the air and keep Back of the Book on WBAI and also to keep the overnight programs in existence. Please give us a call, give them a call, give the call center a call at 1-212-209-2950. And oh, please call that number. Please call the number. We seriously need to hear from some folks. Yes, we need to hear from some of you. 1-212-209-2950. Please, you will be helping us if you become a BAI buddy or make a one-time donation by calling 1-212-209-2950 and either become a BAI buddy or make a one-time donation. It will help. It really does matter. And if you call that number, thank you. That's been it for Back of the Book. Coming up next is
Ecologic with Ken Gale, Donna Stein, and Sally Gellert.
As we said, we are preempted for a fundraising special next week, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. Yes, April 15th, we'll be back. Get your taxes ready. April 15th, we'll be back. And, oh boy, now we got to go rush and edit this thing real fast. So, it's spring, feel the warmth, enjoy it all. We're going to be heading into mid-spring pretty soon. So, take care of yourselves, enjoy the beginning of springtime, and above all, remember what that smacking his lips over that mammoth meatball dormouse said.
Light in your head and dead on your feet. Well, another crazy day. You'll drink the night away and forget about everything. This city desert makes you feel so cold. It's got so many people, but it's got no soul. And it's taking you so long to find out you were wrong when you thought it held everything. You used to think that it was so easy. You used to say that it was so easy. But you're trying now. Another year and then you'll be happy. Just one more year and then you'll be happy. But you're crying now.
David Amram, you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 on your FM dial, and keep on listening.
To listener sponsored WBAI New York with A Moment in Women's History. Grace Paley is familiar to longtime WBAI listeners.
I think someone had said something about how the old anti-war movement thought if we were all nice, everything would change. But the truth is, many people spent many years in jail. Tens of thousands of people lived in exile for many years. There are probably hundreds underground to this day.
Paley helped found the Vietnam Peace Center in 1961. She visited Hanoi as a member of a peace delegation.
Groups of people from the anti-war peace movement went to Vietnam during the war with an arrangement with the Vietnamese government to bring back American prisoners of war. This was the idea of the Vietnamese to really show that they would like to end the war. And they were sending these guys back, three, four at a time. And they were all pilots, they were all officers. It was an officer class. And they asked only one thing, and that was that these pilots not be used again during the war, and that they not have any association with the Air Force. Within 6 months of their return, the United States government had them teaching other pilots and continuing their old work. It was clear from that that the United States had no intentions of ending that war. The reason I'm telling you this is because I think the whole Iranian business is exactly the same thing.
The celebrated writer and peace activist was forever making connections between the past and the present. Grace Paley once said, there's no point in getting older if you can't say something about what happened earlier.
We're living right now at a time where the United States government could have gotten out of the whole thing very easily.
In the 70s, Paley turned her attention to the anti-nuclear movement. She once said for a writer not to be political is peculiar. She was interested in a history of everyday life. She was one of the earliest writers to explore the lives of women, mostly Jewish, mostly New Yorkers, with a focus on single mothers. You can receive our Women's History audio collection with Grace Paley and other trailblazers by becoming a WBAI buddy, a sustaining member for $15 a month.